Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This hour, we're sitting down with Columbus Division of Police Chief Elaine Bryant. She was hired 4 years ago. Chief Bryant was the first chief tapped from outside the department and the first Black woman to hold the position. She's been steering the police force through multiple challenges, from transforming police culture to staffing issues to contending with headlines about crime, youth violence, and officer-involved shootings. Welcome to All Sides, Chief Bryant.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for being with us today. So before we turn our attention to what's happening in Columbus, I want to get your thoughts of what's unfolding right now in Washington, D.C. President Trump has taken control of the D.C. police force. He's ordered the National Guard to the nation's capital, warning he might expand to other cities. So as the police chief in Ohio's largest city, notably a Democratic stronghold, we're here in a red state. What do you make of the president's move in D.C.?
What I do know about the D.C.'s police force is they're doing a phenomenal job as it relates to addressing the crime in their community, as we are here in Columbus. So I support the police department, and I support the efforts that they're doing in reducing their crime. So hopefully that resonates with the community and the residents, and they understand that the police department is doing all they can to ensure that they have a safe community.
Were you pretty surprised to hear that the president decided to send, you know, to kind of take over D.C.?
I was surprised. Yeah.
So the same thing in June, he deployed 3,000 troops to L.A. over ICE raids. Did that surprise you?
It did surprise me as well.
So what do you make of the idea of the federal government trying to control a city, especially with the idea of local control? Yeah. What does that mean to you?
I think that the residents in the community deserve a voice in regards to how they're policed and what that looks like for them. I think that a lot of communities, especially in the past 4 years, have done a really great job in being able to reduce their crime and bring lawfulness back into their communities. So I think it's really important to make sure that the community and the residents have their voice and be able to ensure that their community is strong the way that they want it to be and that it's policed the way that it should be.
The larger narrative that's being shaped by the president and vice president and others in the Republican Party is that crime overall is out of hand. What do you say to that?
I don't agree with that. I think that if you look across the nation, we did see an uptick in crime around 2020 across the nation, but you've also seen a reduction in crime across the nation as well. I think a lot of that had to do with obviously COVID and civil unrest. And so there was a lot of things that occurred during that time period. And I think that a lot of cities have done a great job in being able to recover from that. And we've seen a significant decrease in crime across the nation.
Well, let's talk perception versus reality a little bit, because do you think that people perceive that there's more crime because maybe perhaps of social media or even some news channels that are covering crime more? Does that make it seem like there's more crime if they're seeing it on their scrolling through their feed?
Absolutely. I think it's a couple of things. Perception is reality for a lot of people, and I understand that, because if you are a victim of crime, one is one too many. Mm-hmm. And I completely get that, and I empathize and sympathize with crime victims. And so if you are a victim of crime, you don't care if it's one or if it's 100. And so I think that it's important to recognize and give that validation. But it's also important to recognize that the decrease is significant, and a lot of times what happens is positive stories get buried. And so a lot of people, they sensationalize and they hear about all the bad things that are happening in their community. But there are a lot of good things and a lot of reduction, even as it relates to us here in Columbus. We've seen a significant reduction in our violent crimes. And I think that's important to note. When we look at our homicides, year to date, we're sitting at 47 homicides, which is a significant reduction of almost 40% from 2021. And so out of the 47, we've already solved 38 of those 47. And we've solved an additional 26 from previous years. That adds to making sure that, you know, our community is safe and making sure that we're holding people accountable for the crimes they're committed. But again, if you are a victim of homicide or if your family has been a victim, those numbers don't matter to you, which is why we continue to strive, continue to go out in the community and do the best we can to ensure that we're keeping our citizens and our residents safe.
You mentioned, you know, homicide and other violent crimes in Columbus have been trending down. What do you attribute that to? Is it just, did it reach a real big high and so naturally it goes down? Or is it things that your force has been doing?
No, it's a combination of things. I think, again, recovering from the pandemic, recovering from civil unrest has been huge. Rebuilding that community trust, the collaboration with our community partners, doing some reorganization or restructure in our department, holding our officers, our supervisors, our command staff accountable, case management. We've done some things even with homicide. We've changed the way that we respond to homicides. We have a team concept now. I think that's been huge in ensuring that they have the space, the ability, and the resources to be able to actually investigate the cases. And we've also taken that same approach now with our non-fatal shootings. We started a non-fatal shooting pilot, and we respond to those the same way that we respond to homicides, because we understand a non-fatal shooting is simply someone that just didn't kill the person, but their intention was to take the life. And so doing all these things, working with our community, collaborating, building that transparency and that trust back has been a huge factor in us being able to reduce our crime.
Let's talk about how the records are compiled, because last December, the police acknowledged that Columbus had been misreporting some crime statistics since 2013. How did it come to light, and how was it fixed?
So it wasn't that it was misreported. It simply was not. It was simply not logged in correctly as it relates to the documentation in our technology. But the crimes were actually reported. Mm-hmm. They just were not being logged in correctly. And so immediately, as soon as our deputy chiefs have acknowledged and recognized that this was happening, we immediately started working towards ensuring that those numbers were being reported accurately to the federal government. But everything that we reported in our end of year stats, everything that we report on a monthly basis was absolutely accurate.
Okay, so we can be sure that the numbers are actually trending down despite, you know, checking the wrong box on the computer at some point.
Absolutely.
Okay. Can you give assurances that this is corrected and everyone understands how to do it correctly to report it to the federal government from now on?
Yes, and it wasn't that they were not doing it correctly. Mm. It's, again, I go back to, you have to understand years and years of technology and ensuring that we are doing the correct thing as it relates to making sure that those, we have a records management system, and we have a system that we have to make sure that all of our officers are trained, all of our supervisors. And I go back to that accountability piece when I first got here. We had a turnover in all of our deputy chiefs. We had a turnover in a lot of our command staff. And so making sure that we have the right people in the right spots was really critical. And we have that now.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Police Chief Elaine Bryant of the Columbus Division of Police. And I wanted to ask you about the recent brawl in Cincinnati that put Ohio and crime in the national spotlight. On July 26th, a fight broke out between black and white individuals in downtown Cincinnati. Video of the fighting went viral, and it was snippets of the video, so it wasn't exactly the full context of what happened. When you see something like that getting out of control in another Ohio city, what do you make of this incident and, like, lessons about it?
We always are looking across the nation, across our state, and ensuring that we recognize what's going on and take measures to ensure that we address anything that could possibly happen like that here in Columbus. We have a dialogue team that has been established, and we work very hard with our protest, with a lot of our activists, with a lot of our community people that have issues. And so our dialogue team is responsible for ensuring that we have peaceful protests, ensuring that all sides are safe when they're doing protests. And so when I look at things like that, I understand how it affects the community. I understand how it affects even officers and their wellness. So we make sure that we take those lessons and we apply them, and we make sure that we're doing what we can to make sure that doesn't happen here in the city of Columbus.
And my understanding is that Cincinnati had upped their enforcement in near this area until like 2 a.m. And then this happened at like 3 a.m., right? So is it just You can't have people everywhere all the time.
You cannot. There's no way. In a perfect world, you'd have a police officer on every corner, 24 hours, 7 days a week. But that's not the reality. So you have to ensure that you have intelligence. You have to ensure that you are using your resources and data to have people in the right places. And you have to ensure that community engagement is there and that you have people that are in the community, your officers are in the community, consistently talking to people to be able to de-escalate situations.
Did you call the police chief in Cincinnati about, did you talk to them about this?
I did not have any conversations with the chief in Cincinnati, no.
Okay. I didn't know if you guys, have meetings or anything, hey, we're all police chiefs in big cities, let's chat.
There is a collective OACP. There is a collective International Association Chiefs mm-hmm. of Police, Major City Chiefs Association. So I do often run into them at mm-hmm. these communities and these meetings.
So here's Vice President J.D. Vance at a recent event in Canton, and he was asked a question there about the brawl in Cincinnati. He conceded at that moment he didn't have the full context of the story and he hadn't seen the entire video, but here's what he said.
How many of you all have wanted to go to downtown Akron or downtown Canton or downtown Columbus for a meal, but you're worried because the local authorities in these big cities have allowed lawlessness to run wild? We have got to make great American cities safe again.
So what do you make of that characterization? He called out Columbus specifically, lawlessness.
I think it's unfortunate and sad that he would say that because we've worked really hard, not only as a police force, but as a community, as a government, to ensure that we are keeping our community safe. If you look again at the numbers, our crimes are trending significantly down. We've had 180 less felonious assaults in the city year to date from previous years, and they continue to trend down. We're also making arrests left and right as it relates to people that are creating havoc in our community. So to say that it's lawlessness, I think is an unfortunate statement.
What are the biggest challenges Columbus faces when it comes to crime? What keeps you up at night?
Everything keeps me up at night. But specifically, again, ensuring that our communities are safe and our youth. We really want to pour into them. One of the big things that we focus on is not just about enforcement. You can't arrest your way out of these situations. So prevention and intervention are huge for us as well. So we have a lot of youth programs. We really focus on trying to wrap our arms around them before they get to a point of no return. And so our TAPS program, which is Teen and Police, is important. Our safety corps and our cadet program, which is we focus on children between youth between the ages of 18 and 21. They are actually employed with the police department, people that are interested in being able to join because you can't join until you're 21 years old. And so we employ them, we bring them in, we teach them about the things that we're doing, we get them prepared for the academy. So because we know oftentimes between the ages of 18 and 21, you may do things that could actually prevent you from being a police officer. So we want to wrap our arms around them and give them the opportunity to understand that you can be a part of the solution. And so I think it's really important to know that we do a lot of things. We have a Beyond Enforcement program that's really aimed at junior high school and high school kids. And we teach them, hey, these are the consequences. We show them, we do mock courts. We take them to the morgue. We show them things that happen if you are not on the right path. So we're going to continue to pour into our youth, pour into our community to make sure that we can prevent things as opposed to just responding to them.
There are rising concerns among the public about youth violence. How would you compare numbers of crimes committed by youth today to maybe 10 years ago? Is it worse today or is there just more social media about it today?
No, unfortunately, it is. Mm-hmm. Our youth are definitely not where we want them to be, which is why we continue to collaborate with Columbus City Schools. We continue to collaborate with our youth judges. We have to, and our prosecutor, we have to make sure that we're all on the same page and we have the same agenda and goal, which is to decrease our youth violence and make sure that they're on the right path. Unfortunately, we are seeing an uptick in our youth violence.
So, I mean, all of those things that you mentioned, all those programs that you have, are they making a difference or are they all new? Because some of the things you mentioned all sound like new names to me. And I've been around Columbus for a while, but maybe I just didn't know about them.
Some of them are new. Mm-hmm. Definitely some of them are new. A lot of our collaborations, unfortunately, were not happening prior to me getting here. So they are new as well. But like our TAPS program has been around for a minute. I think they are making a difference. Again, I go back to the numbers and the decrease that we are seeing in our crimes, even in our youth crimes. They're not happening as fast as we would like them to, but I do like to think that we are making a difference.
We can circle back to youth violence a little bit later in the show, but right now I wanted to move on to former Columbus police officer Adam Coy was convicted for murder and sentenced to life for shooting Andre Hill, a black man who was unarmed. This happened in December of 2020. Coy is the first Columbus officer to be charged and sentenced. So where do you come down on officers facing murder charges?
I respect the process. If a police officer does something and he is convicted in a court of law, that is the process. And I respect that process. What I will tell you is this. We have officers that go out every single day and they are doing the right things for the right reasons. They are take an oath. We have so many great officers that are out here doing some really significant work. And being a police officer is not easy. I will tell you, you have to make a decision in a split second. And a lot of people we take through our Citizens Police Academy, we do the shoot, don't shoot simulation. And you would be surprised how many people have actually been like, wow, I had no idea that it is that hard or, you know, it is that stressful. So what I will tell you is that for the million, for the one or two or maybe even three police officers that may not do it right, we have millions that are out here that are really doing a great job to protect and serve. So as it relates to officers, I've said it from the day that I got here. If you're doing the right things for the right reasons, I will support you 100%. If you do the wrong things, then you're going to be held accountable.
Are there ripple effects in your police department from this? Did the Coy sentencing make officers worried? How did it affect the culture?
What I will tell you is that we have a strong relationship with our officers and a very open dialogue. I have advisory panels. We speak every day. We're very open and transparent with them. Do I think that some people were affected? Absolutely. How could you not be? But at the end of the day, officers also have not stopped working. They're out there doing their job. They are very much resilient. They have a great relationship with their community. And they took an oath. And they absolutely go out there every day. And I flip it. They serve and protect.
Do you feel, you know, just hearing about the trial, seeing what happened between Coy and Andre Hill, did the justice system get it right?
I was not here. I was not the police chief during the time. But again, I respect that process. And the jury spoke, and this is what it is, and I respect the process.
When it comes to race, I mean, you mentioned you know, your work to address implicit bias, which can play a role, sometimes even subconsciously, in actions where police come to race. You know, in this instance, Coy is white, Hill was black. How are you addressing that idea of making that split second decision, but also having that implicit bias, even subconsciously?
We train and we have all type of diversity training with our officers and our police officers. I would like to think that officers are making decisions based on what they're seeing in front of them, based on any threat that they may perceive. I know that it exists. I'm not naive to that. And so that's why it's really important that we have programs like community immersion. I think that it's really important for officers to be able to meet and have interaction with their community prior to having a call for service. I think it's important for them to be immersed in the culture, immersed in their communities. And so we make it a point to make sure that we bring in our community people. They have be able to have conversations, whether it's based on race, whether it's LGBTQ+, whatever it may be, we want to make sure that they are immersed in their culture and they understand. And the first time you meet a police officer should not be on a call for service. So that's important to us.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And coming up, we will continue talking with Police Chief Elaine Bryant about police reforms 5 years after the George Floyd murder and worldwide protest. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This hour, we're talking with Chief Elaine Bryant of the Columbus Division of Police. During her 4 years in charge, she's been steering the police force through multiple challenges, from transforming police culture to staffing shortages to contending with headlines about crime, youth violence, and officer-involved shootings, while also seeing a drop in homicides and other violent crimes. Chief Bryant, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Absolutely.
So National Night Out was August 6th, and more than 120 Ohio cities participated in the event, including Columbus. You were quoted as saying, and you just said it earlier in the hour, the first time you meet your police officer in your community should not be on a service call. So how are you in the department making or working to make sure that residents get to know officers before they have to call 911?
So we are very big on, when I first got here, I told them community engagement is huge to me. I realized that when I first got here, the relationship between the community and police department was fractured. And so we worked very hard to try and repair that. We encourage police officers to get out in the community. We encourage them to have conversations, get out of your police car, go talk to your community residents. Go into the local rec centers, talk to the kids, engage with the youth. A lot of officers, they volunteer for the TAPS program. It is not something that they're assigned to, but they actually volunteer their time. And so we also have community immersion, which is for newer officers when they graduate. They're actually assigned a community project. And so they work with different community partners to actually achieve these projects. And then they come back and they present in the academy and tell us what they've learned and talk about their relationships that they've had with the community. So these are a lot of the things that we're really focused on. You should not meet your police officer the first time on a call for services when things are stressful and high. You should already know them. And so that's really important to us.
Whenever you have police officers out in the community going to these community events, do they go in full uniform, or do you have like a dress down uniform or anything like that? Like, what's the best way to interact with a police officer? Because sometimes walking up with that full belt of stuff with a police car behind you, that can be intimidating.
Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the first things that I did when we got here is we spoke with the officers, asked them how they felt about uniforms. You know, what did they want to see? And so I know a lot of people noticed that we shifted from wearing the traditional white shirts on a daily basis to a softer approach with the blue uniforms, baseball caps. And so we allowed them to wear beards. We allowed them to show their tattoos. We feel like officers should reflect the community in which they police. And that made the officers more approachable. And so you had kids coming up to them saying, hey, that's a cool tattoo. Where'd you get it from? Now conversations are happening. And so a lot of officers even have the polo shirts, a softer uniform. Our community liaison officers, our recruiting officers. So they're allowed to dress in polos and khakis. It shouldn't always have to be necessarily a full uniform. So it really depends on the event, and it really depends on the role that the officer is playing at that time.
Right, right. And I mean, you want them also to still look like a police officer, because that's,
sure,
that's the whole point, right? to meet your police officer. Okay, so 5 years ago was the death of George Floyd at the knee of a Minneapolis police officer, Derek Chauvin, which led to worldwide protests, calls for reform policing, even calls to defund the police. So Columbus and other police departments vowed to make changes. You've spoken about the importance of transparency, and you spoke about the importance of neighborhood policing. How would you rate your department on those initiatives? I know you got here post-2020, but from 2020 to now, how are things going?
I think they're going really well. What a lot of people need to understand is a lot of police departments saw an extreme overturn in their personnel between that time, as well as we have hired so many police officers between 2020 and 2025. It's amazing when you look at the police force. So it's really important to make sure that when you're training officers, you are really emphasizing in your academies the impact that it had. You're emphasizing how important relationships are in the community, and you're emphasizing how important it is for you to have that respect, that mutual respect, and that trust. And so we've done that. I think that we've done a really good job in immersing ourselves back into the community and hearing. It's important for both sides to understand how each other feel. It's not just the community that had a distrust for police, but police officers were a little leery as well. And so to have those community conversations and be able to express how each other feel, because what I needed officers to understand is, even though it didn't happen here in Columbus, you have to understand how people are feeling. And it's not just about that one incident. A lot of people are having trauma from things that they may have experienced. And so hear them, understand them, and then let's figure out how to fix it and change.
In 2020, Mayor Andrew Ginther offered buyouts in the form of, it was a $20 million retirement incentive program. 100 Columbus police officers took part in this. Was this an effort to transform police culture? 100 retirements, that has to change the culture.
We did. And I think it's significant to even understand that it wasn't just about the officers, but there was also a buyout for the deputy chiefs as well. Mm. So executive team also had a turnover, which I think was extremely important in being able to, again, put the right people in the right spots and be able to move forward and make sure that we have the accountability, make sure we have the engagement that was necessary. It's really important for officers to see that management and executive team are also out there. They were also showing up to these events. They were also being held accountable in the community as well.
Now, just to help me with numbers, it's because 100 officers retiring, like, I don't know what percentage that is, but what's your total force right now?
So we have an authorized strength of about 2,100, mm-hmm. somewhere around there. We're doing really well. Mm-hmm. This is what I can tell you right now as a department. One thing that the mayor did is he authorized a third class for us, which was extremely important. We are right now, we have a class starting August 18th, and we're going to have 75 recruits in that class for Columbus alone, which is huge. One of the biggest classes that we've seen in quite a while. We actually are at a point now where we have a waiting list. We have people that are waiting to go into the December class as well.
Wow, a waiting list. That has to be shocking to you.
Yes. So we're doing really well as it relates to recruiting. We've done a really good job. And I attribute that to the officers that are actually on the street. They're our biggest recruiters. People see that they enjoy their job. People see that, you know, officers are really engaged in their community and people want to be a part of that.
Are most of the people in these classes 21, 22 years old? Are they all young, or do you have all a bunch of ages?
I don't have the statistics in front of me, but we do have a lot of people that are younger that want to be police officers. But we also see a gamut of ages. You have some people that want to do a second career and say, I've always wanted to be a police officer. So if you could pass the background, if you pass everything that we need, we welcome you and we encourage you to come join our department.
So my producer, Aaron Rabinowitz, talked with an officer recently who said the biggest issue is staffing, with officers working constant overtime just to make required minimums on the number of officers. Do you have enough officers right now to ensure public safety?
It's interesting that they would say that, because we look at that every single time that we have an executive staff meeting, and numbers are not as dire as people are making them. We actually have a very, it's my job to make sure that I am leveling across the department. And so I make sure that I don't take too many from patrol, because I know patrol is the backbone of any police department. And so when you look at our staffing numbers, we're sitting really well. Unfortunately for us, we have things like PELs or people calling off or taking sick time. And so we have no control over that, but we make sure that we're balancing that. And we can't take a cookie cutter approach, because every neighborhood is different. So some neighborhoods, they may have more calls for service, or they may have more violent crime. And so we have to ensure that we are addressing that. That's part of our data of policing and making sure that we have the resources where they need to be. Our city is continuously growing as well. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we look at as well. Over the past decade, we've seen a significant increase in the population as it relates to Columbus. The mayor understands that, which is why he's continuously adding and increasing our numbers, which is really important. So we're doing really well. Could we do better? Absolutely. What police department couldn't do better? But again, showing that significant reduction in crime, I think that speaks for itself.
Is your overtime budget maxed out, or are you using all the overtime you can?
We have to be smarter about how we do overtime. So I've tasked my executive team and the command staff. And what we've done is we've looked at wasteful overtime.
Okay.
And so we've seen a significant decrease in our overtime and making sure that we are managing. I task the sergeants and lieutenants when you're allowing people to take off, or when we're looking at how we're staffing, to make sure that you're doing your job and ensuring that staffing is done in an appropriate manner.
And I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but how are response times? Have they increased, decreased? What's going on there?
We're actually doing really good with our response time. So we are doing, don't quote me on this, but average, we're looking at, with our priority ones, we're looking at less than 5 minutes, which is significant. We're doing really good with response times.
Okay. And then also, among some reforms that you have, there's a shift in certain calls and how they're handled, especially domestic violence calls, which is bringing, which, because sometimes domestic violence calls have a higher risk of escalation and put officers in harm's way. So there's the idea of having social workers on the team, to have social workers go in to some calls. How's that going?
Oh, it's going really good. We do have our STOP program. So we train officers specifically as it relates to domestic violence and making sure that they have the resources and the tools they need to be able to handle it. As you know, domestic violence, unfortunately, is on the rise. And we actually are sitting at, out of our 47 homicides, 14 that are DV related, which is a significant number. So we are concerned about that. So we are looking.
DV took me a second. Domestic violence. I got it.
Yes, I'm sorry. yes, domestic violence yes. related. And so we are making sure that our officers are trained and they understand the significance of that. It's really important to have those resources. So having those social workers available to talk to victims in real time is extremely important.
Do you have enough, or do you wish you had more? Is there, I mean, is this the way to go? Is this the future? You want to increase this program?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's important. We don't hire the social workers. So we partner with the city. I think they do a really good job in giving us what we need. And so we would love to be able to see that across the entire city. So we're working towards increasing our program.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Police Chief Elaine Bryant of the Columbus Division of Police. So we were talking about recruiting, and a few years ago, Columbus's police recruiting classes were smaller than usual. You said that's rebounded. You have a wait list for your recruiting class. Of those 75 that you mentioned are starting the class, how many of the 75 people are from Columbus? Do you have to live in Columbus to be a Columbus police officer?
You do not have to live in Columbus to be a Columbus police officer. I'm not from Columbus either.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
But no, you don't have to be. But what you do have to do is have a commitment and want to be a public servant, because that's what we are, public servants. So I can't tell you the numbers offhand, and I have to talk to my recruiting team. So, but you don't have to be a resident, but you do have to have a commitment to our city.
Okay. And so you said that you have 75 coming into this class. You have another class in December. You have a wait list as well. Do you have a lot of officers ready for retirement, or are these numbers going to keep up with what you need? I guess
we've seen a significant decrease in our retirement numbers. So they've leveled off, you know, across the nation, especially since 2020, a lot of cities have saw challenges in being able to hire. And so I think that, again, we've done a really good job. My recruiting team is amazing. They've done a good job in being able to advertise. And again, police officers are our biggest recruiters. So we have seen a significant reduction in people that are actually retiring. But as you know, retirements are going to happen. And some people, they time out. They have to retire. You know, there is a time where people have to leave. And so we are actually hiring more than we're seeing leaving. So we are seeing an increase in our numbers.
There have been concerns nationally about militarizing police forces, everything from hiring officers straight from the military to departments with tanks or more sophisticated weapons. What do you see of the pros and cons of hiring out, like, the militarization of the police force, having these more sophisticated weapons?
I don't think that militarization of a police department is necessarily the best idea. While there are situations and scenarios where it's necessary to have certain equipment, I think that we should definitely be in a position to be able to, if we need to use them, we have certain things. But I think it's more important to focus on community engagement. I think it's more important to focus on officer wellness and making sure that we're putting the best officer out on the street that we can to be able to engage with our community. And again, going back to prevention and intervention. But there are times where enforcement is necessary. And so we want to make sure that we are equipping our officers with those tools as well.
Do you ever have concerns about being outgunned, like quite literally, that people, you know, have weapons that are powerful and better than yours?
No. Okay. I don't have those concerns. Okay. I'm more concerned about making sure that officers, again, are as trained, as well trained as they possibly can, and that their psychological, their mental well-being is taken care of.
We recently did a show on our technology segment about ghost guns, and there's more and more ghost guns on the street. What's the solution to that?
Again, making sure that our officers are trained in understanding and recognizing what those look like. We've actually taken less ghost guns off the street than we did last year or so. Hopefully that is indicative of being able to say that we're the ATF, in collaboration with local agencies, we're doing a great job.
How do you keep your... because, you know, I mentioned earlier in the hour, I was talking about, you know, the president and the vice president talking about lawlessness. How do you keep up morale in this political environment? Because I'm sure that your officers encounter citizens from all across the political spectrum who believe all kinds of things. So how do politics and morale combine together for you?
For sure. We're really lucky, or I should say that the officers here are amazing and our community is amazing. They really wrap their arms around the officers and they really support them despite the rhetoric or what you may hear. I cannot go anywhere without residents saying your officers are doing an amazing job. We're so grateful for them. They've done this. I get stories every single day about how officers have done something amazing. Just the other day, I had someone text me and say, I was on the freeway and, there was a lot of cars were backed up and we didn't know what was going on. I thought there was something nefarious or something. Mm-hmm. And just to only find out that the officers had stopped traffic because they were getting a dog that was stuck on the freeway off the street. They said they showed so much care and compassion. Just what an amazing thing. So when you hear stories about officers that are feeding kids that were hungry, and they're not looking for recognition, they're not looking for approval, they're doing it because they just want to, and they connect with the community. So I think that the officers' morale is better than people could even imagine, because the community surrounds and protects our officers and wrap their arms around them. And so that community engagement has been paying off. And so I think that it's more my job, and it's important for me to address or deal with the outside noise and the rhetoric and make sure that the officers know that they're supported.
I heard about that dog. I think it was hard to catch.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a tricky situation on 315.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we are talking with Columbus Police Chief Elaine Bryant, and coming up, we're going to talk about police technology, helicopters, and Chief Bryant's future. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour with Columbus Division Police Chief Elaine Bryant. Thank you again for being here today.
Absolutely.
So you oversee an agency of more than 2,000 people. It's a challenging job. People are making life and death decisions. Lots of people are weighing in on how to do your job. I asked how your officers are handling the political climate. How are you handling the political climate?
I'm doing well. I have my support system. I make sure that I take time for me. But I'm also very much, I've been doing this for 25 years. Policing has been my life. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've seen a lot of different political climates now. Is this one significantly different?
No, actually, it's not. Again, I go back to I am not a politician. I am definitely a police officer. I'm a cop's cop. But I also understand my position and my role. So I really take it to heart that it's my job to make sure that my officers have what they need, that their mental health is addressed and protected, and that the community's needs are addressed as well.
So you were hired and you received a 5-year contract. So that goes until June of 2026.
Correct.
Do I have it right? Okay. So there's the option for the city to renew another 5 years. I know you don't know the city's plan, but what are your plans come June 2026?
I'm enjoying my job. I really love this community. I love the officers. I love the residents. So we'll just see what happens. I feel like it's really important for a chief to be able to continue to move the needle, to be able to continue to make progress. So as long as I feel that I'm able to do that, and as long as the residents, the officers, and the community want me, we'll see what happens.
Will you stay if they offer you another contract?
We'll see where we are in June of 2026. But as it stands right now, I am really happy with the progress that we're making, and I really love my job.
What led you to decide to become a police officer?
It's a funny story. I actually never wanted to be the police. I don't have anyone in my family that are police officers. I was at the time in a relationship with someone that was a police officer, and I was actually very unhappy in the career choice that I was in. And I expressed that to this particular person, and they said, well, do something else. And I'm like, well, it's easy for you to say. You've always known you wanted to be a police officer since you were in second grade. And he said, well, everyone can't do it. It takes a special person to be a police officer. And I said, well, I bet I can. And so that kind of just started. I'm very competitive. And so that just started a conversation. And the next thing I know, he's bringing me the paperwork to sign up. And I did it. And here we are 25 years later.
Wow. The profession, that it's largely male dominated. How much has that changed in your career in terms of both gender and racial diversity in police force?
Not a lot. It's still a very male-dominated field, but I think that people understand that women bring a lot to policing. I think that it's recognized that we have a lot to offer, and so I do have quite a few colleagues across the nation, from captains to commanders to deputy chief assistant chiefs, that are women that are doing some phenomenal work.
That new class coming in, do you happen to know if there's any women in it?
I have no idea about the stats. I apologize.
That's okay. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about policing with Chief Elaine Bryant of the Columbus Division of Police. More Central Ohio departments are turning to drones to respond to crime faster or get eyes on the scene more quickly. But Columbus is not one of them. Why no drones?
We actually are one of them. Oh. We've purchased drones. We're in the process of creating policy before we roll them out to patrol.
Okay, so you're not using them yet. That's what I was wondering.
We have.
You own them.
We recently. Legislation, it has to pass through council. Mm-hmm. Has to do all those things. So we recognize how important they are. We have them. We are in the process of creating our policy to make sure that we have the proper training, we have the proper policies in place. But we understand how important they are, and we definitely are going to be utilizing them.
Where do you see using them first? What's
patrol?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. And the Dublin Police Department is rolling out robots. What are your thoughts of using technology like a police robot or AI for policing?
We have to see how that works. One thing at a time. Drones are definitely going to be important for our police department. We have used them before in partnership with some of our partners, so we know that they're efficient and effective. So we'll see how that goes with the robots.
And then the next thing I wanted to talk about was helicopters. So older technology. The city is purchasing 2 Bell helicopters for its fleet of 5 choppers. The 2 ones are $6 million. City Council approved this back in June. So this comes a year after the city sold one of its helicopters and 3 years after council called for reducing the helicopter fleet to 3. So I'm just wondering, how do we balance? Do we need helicopters?
Oh, we absolutely need helicopters. You're talking about a city that spans over 226 square miles. And what people need to understand is, one, it was important to purchase new helicopters because of the technology that is included with our new helicopters. And while our helicopters look great, they are older. We're talking 2012. One is 2006. So it's important to make sure that we're keeping up with our technology, ensuring that we have the newer helicopters, not only for the resident safety, but for the pilots as well as for our aviation unit. They come with new technology. We're talking about They have night vision and flare, heat sensors, video recording. They can see the larger picture. And so that's really important to make sure that we have that. We don't have all the helicopters up at the same time. And that's the other thing. I think that's a misconception about why so many helicopters. You're required to make sure that you ground helicopters for a certain amount of time. And so while you may have a couple up in the air, you don't have all of them up in the air at the same time. They require maintenance. And so having a fleet of five is not uncommon for a city, the 14th largest city in the nation, or that has 226 square miles. Helicopters aren't just about enforcement either. Helicopters have been used to locate dementia patients that have wandered away, autistic children that have wandered away. They have located weapons that have been thrown up on top of rooftops for shootings or homicides. So they're used for various reasons.
So do you think drones can replace the need for helicopters?
They cannot. So there are specific things that helicopters can do that drones can't do. For instance, drones, I think, are very useful, especially in a smaller or more condensed area, where a helicopter may be able to get from one side of the city all the way to the other side in real time and when we may need them.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot about drones not having as much, can't go as far, right? And maybe not being as reliable. But eventually, don't you think that we'll get there with the technology where maybe we don't need five helicopters if we have, I don't know, 20 drones?
Well, I don't know, because I'll give you a prime example of where a helicopter came in and where it was significant. We actually had a situation where a sheriff was in trouble, and no one really understood or knew where this particular sheriff was. The helicopter was actually able to locate them, land, and that particular person got out and helped that sheriff and was able to subdue a suspect. So a drone wouldn't be able to carry a person
and
be able to do that.
That is very true. We're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you about ICE. There's a lot of federal changes going on. Cities are getting swept up in deportation roundups. How do you feel about ICE agents in Columbus, and has ICE talked to you about being here, or how is Columbus and ICE interacting?
We have great relationships with our federal partners, but what I can tell you is that we are committed to our residents and ensuring their safety. I don't really like to get into the political aspect. My concern is about the safety and the commitment to our residents. If there is someone that is committing a crime, if there is someone that is causing harm to our community, it doesn't matter what your status is. You're a problem to our community. And so that's what we're focused on here in Columbus.
If ICE called you and asked you to help with a raid, would Columbus comply?
We're going to do what we have to do if it's a federal mandate. But what I can tell you again is our concern is about our residents and our community. So if there is someone that is committing a crime, if there is someone that is a harm to our community, we're going to address that no matter what your immigration status is. But we are very much protective of our community, and we are very much protective of our residents, no matter who you are.
What if that crime is just being here illegally? Is that a crime?
Again, I go back to we are more concerned about the harm to our community. If you're harming people in our community, if you are committing crimes, if you're shooting, if you're domestic violence, if you are stealing vehicles, whatever the crime may be, if you are a harm to this community, no matter what your status is, we're going to address that. My job as the chief is to address crime.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about, or maybe the next to last thing, depends on how long your answer is, the Citizens Police Academy, it runs from August through November 19th. The application window just closed. But who usually signs up for these classes? You talked about a lot of youth programs, but tell me about the Citizens Police Academy.
Yeah, so anyone can sign up for the Citizens Police Academy. So we encourage anybody across the city, if you are a pastor, if you are a community activist, if you are just a person in your community that wants to know, what are the police doing? What type of training do they have? I wonder what it's like to be a police officer. So we open it up to all aspects and all residents, business owners, anyone that wants to come. We're open to being able to share and show them what we actually have to offer and what our officers go through. Again, that simulation is really important. And a lot of people that go through that, they say they didn't realize the split decision that officers have to make. And so I think it's really informative, and it brings the community and that collaboration that we talk about together.
In the next, we have about 90 seconds left. What do you have on your agenda in the next few months that you're excited about for your department?
We have a lot of community events that we are involved in. There's a community car show that's coming up August 31st, our Rich Street Roar. So we're excited about that. Obviously, as we come into the coming months, we have school that's starting. So our collaboration with Columbus City Schools, ensuring that our children are safe as they go back to school, making sure that the football games and all the after school sports are safe. We have our trunk or treat, our shop with the cop. We are really intentional about making sure that it's not just about enforcement, but that we are interacting with our community.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for spending the hour with us.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Columbus Division Police Chief Elaine Bryant. And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen at our website. That's WOSU.org/allsides. Subscribe to our podcast. And every episode is also available for free to listen to in the WOSU mobile app. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook, and you can follow the show on Instagram. Our Instagram is at All Sides, WOSU. You can see some behind-the-scenes pictures of the show. Thank you for listening. I'm Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News.